Speaking on this program is Bill Boyd.
The book of Ephesians, chapter 6, verse 1. And look at that first word, beautiful word, children. That word is filled with joy and innocence and hope and purpose. And I know that some of us, some of the best times of our lives were when we were children. And after we grow up, some of the best days of our lives and some of the best times we have are the times we spend with children. What a blessing that is, that the way God set things up, that we have children. It's kind of dawned on me, you know, if it wasn't for children, there wouldn't be grandchildren. So what a joy it is to have children. And when people would go hear Jesus preach, they'd take their children. And they wanted them to see Jesus and be with Him. He would even take one and set them in their midst and say, of such is the kingdom of heaven. Children. Taking children to go hear the preacher. These epistles, this epistle to the church at Ephesus, was sent to be read in the assembly. And they would read the things that we've been studying about God's church and how glorious it is and what it is to be part of it and how to behave. And as they would read this, in that assembly would be children. And so He's addressing them directly here, bringing their children to the assembly. We did that with our four children. We went to the assembly. In fact, we didn't really sit down and decide this is just seemed like the right thing to do, that we built our week around the worship service. And when our children were little, and sometimes they'd be so tired that, you know, they'd be irritable in church, you know, well, we figured that out. And we'd do nap times and such so that they would be able to be alert and aware and behave during worship. You have to really plan and work at that for that to work out. And I got to thinking, how much time do we spend doing that? Because when we had all four of those children at home, we had a long way to drive. I know we would spend 4 hours on Sunday morning just to attend worship. Because it would be Sunday school and worship. And then on Sunday night, it was another 3. That's 7 hours. That's almost like a work day just to get to worship and back. And then we do it on Wednesday night. There's another 3 hours. And then I got to thinking when I talked about that, because, you know, you'd get there a little early, you'd stay a little late and visit with folks, and the travel time involved, it'd be an hour, and the preacher was often too long. And there were little children now. And that didn't count the time we spent getting ready. That was a big commitment. And I know, parents, it is hard work to make sure that you bring your children to the assembly. It just is a practical matter, opposed to the idea of taking children out of the assembly. They took their children to hear Jesus preach. They had their children when they were reading these epistles. How exciting and entertaining was that for children to have somebody up there reading this, and you got to listen to this now, and then try to behave. They would meet in those synagogues and places of assembly, and they'd see where all the people came. Well, what did they do with their children? They took them with them. And the children were there. And it's a lot of work. And one thing we taught our children to do, I'll give you some little practical matter, because we did this. And that is to be quiet. And as long as they were quiet, we kept them in the assembly. We would only remove them when they were not quiet because we thought they were disturbing others. They never left the assembly and had more fun outside the assembly than they had inside. It was always worse to be out. It just wasn't going to be comfortable. If we had to, we'd just set up a straight chair and sit in a chair and be uncomfortable. So they'd find out that it's better to be in the assembly than out. And they learned to be quiet. Sometime with my boys, it was an hour of quiet wrestling match. Okay? And I was tired at the end. But they learned to be in the assembly. And that was priority. And it was a lot of work. And stressful time of our life. And we had other things that would start trying to interfere. School was a big interference. Big homework assignments given on Wednesday. Due on Thursday. And I've gone to teachers and explained, this is why this assignment's not done. Now, if it was given Monday and due Thursday, I didn't explain because we had to get that done. But given at the last minute and it meant missing worship, no, you went to worship. The bigger it cost, the more it cost, and the bigger sacrifice it made was the bigger lesson that we're able to teach about seeking first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. What a great way to illustrate that. Now, we had a lot of things going on, of course. And honors club, and sports, and scouts, and forensic league. And we missed some of those things, some of the big events. Because we just didn't compromise the fact that we were going to be in the assembly with our children. Another practical way to deal with this, and that is if you're going to get your children involved in these other activities that could interfere with worship, make sure that you as a parent are very involved with the coach or the teacher or whatever, and be very supportive so that when it's going to interfere with worship, you can sit down and say, now look, this is this part of this event that we won't be a part of because it interferes with our worship. Now, sometimes I'd get a little bit of rebuff from that, but I think they saw right quick, well, he means it, and it's not. And I'll tell you, those teachers and those coaches and those scout people and such, they got to where they really respected us for that. And I think we helped give them a lesson on how our family has priorities. And worshiping God is something we're going to teach our children. A lot of effort, a lot of sacrifice, a lot of stress, and missed a lot of pretty neat things. Was it worth it? I've got 4 children in 3 states in 4 assemblies. And they're going to be there tonight. And they're going to be there Wednesday night. And they're not thinking this is some special thing they do. They're just like we did. We just thought that's what you did. That's the way. I'm so thankful for my mother and father and my in-laws that taught Lori and I, that's just what you do. And that's just what we did. And when I see that's just what my children do, I promise you, it is worth it. Children, now, this is talking to children. I want you to listen to this. Here's what it says. Children, obey your parents. I think that's one of the first memory verses I ever had. Children, obey your parents. Now, there's some good reasons to do this. Now, one reason is they're bigger than you are, and they can punish you. There's a better reason. They love you. And they do know more than you do. And they know what's best for you. And they really want what's best for you. That's why they tell you these things. They love you. There's an even better reason. And it's given right here in this text. Children, obey your parents, for this is right. I love the way Paul talks to children. Is that hard to understand? No. Children, we didn't understand this. This is right. Now, the very best reason to do anything is because it's the right thing to do. So, children, obey your parents. This is right. I once heard a preacher say, and I've said it, you may have heard me say this, it is always right to do what's right. It's always wrong to do what's wrong. It's never wrong to do what's right. It is never right to do what's wrong. And that's right. Because the Bible's right. So the very best reason to obey your parents is for this is right. But now, every now and then, I have heard about children that know better than their parents. In fact, I have even heard that there were teenagers that knew better than their parents. I have heard teenagers that would say this, that my parents just don't understand me. I've heard that. And I know a teenager that was like that. We got a Bible example of a teenager, and their parents just didn't understand him. And he knew better than his parents. And I read about him in Luke chapter 2 and in verse 50 when it's talking about Jesus and his parents. And it says, they understood not the sayings which he spake unto them. Now, teenagers, have you ever felt like your parents just didn't understand you? Well, Jesus knows just how that feels. They did not understand the sayings which he spake unto them. Well, now, how did Jesus deal with that? He went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject unto them. Now listen, children and teens, and it may be that your parents don't understand you. And it may be that you do know better than your parents. But you don't know better than Jesus. And what an example that was. He was subject to his parents. Now it goes on to say, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Now, what does that mean? And usually that expression, in the Lord, means that it's talking about being a Christian. So does that mean children that are Christians are to obey their parents? Well, if you're going to be the kind of child of God that you ought to be, and you're a Christian, then you're going to obey your parents. So that's true. But it's also true that if you're not a Christian, you still need to obey your parents. Well, does that mean children obey your parents who are Christians? Well, I hope your parents are Christians. It's one of the greatest blessings a child can have is to have a mother and father that are Christians. And if they're Christians, they're trying to do what's right. And so it's just wonderful to have parents like that to obey. But you need to obey your parents whether they're Christians or not. So what does it mean? And I think even though that word in the Lord usually means talking about someone being a Christian, I really think the context here, and there's a few places where that expression occurs, that the context may better be asking us to say this, as long as children you obey your parents in things that are in keeping with the Lord's will. And that always fits. When it comes to obeying the civil authorities, when it comes to obeying parents, when it comes to obeying anything, God always comes first. And so children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Then it says, honor your father and your mother. Now that will start by obeying them. But then as you get older, it's not just obeying them, it turns into giving them respect. You don't sass back at mother and father. There's some lines here now you don't cross. And so you show respect for your parents. Now parents, I know there's a lot of things to teach children, but you don't punish children for being children. You punish them for disrespect. Rebellion's what you punish. Now you're going to be children, so you're going to do children things. And you got to learn to grow up, okay. But then there's this disrespect. And you just don't allow it. It's just not going to happen. And that's where punishment comes in. And you honor your parents by showing respect. And you just keep on going. You honor your parents when they're aged and have trouble looking after themselves. And you're there. They took care of you when you were children. Now you honor them. You look after them. And so, honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise. First commandment with promise that it may be well with thee and thou mayest live long on the earth. That's not exactly how it was given in the Old Testament. In the book of Exodus, And chapter 20 and verse 12, it says, Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. And it's really talking about that nation being able to dwell in the land of Canaan. You honor your father and your mother. This is the right thing to do. You do that, and God says, I will see to it that you can live in this land a long time. Well, what does that mean for us? Well, when you read it, it kind of sounds like, maybe the way the translation lived, that you can live longer, have a longer, healthier life. I know children that obey their parents that don't live long, healthy lives, and it's very tragic. So, that's not an absolute. It is generally so, though, that a lot of times young people lose their life as a consequence of their rebellion. And so, it could play into that. But I believe there's also a social message here that we just have better lives. We have a better society if it's ordered and if the home stays intact and the children are taught discipline at home to be obedient and to honor their parents, and that carries out into society, and a lot of the social problems that we are dealing with to this day can be traced right back to not giving our homes a priority. And you start breaking these homes apart, and these number of single parent families that and a lot of them by choice, and unwed mothers, and you go on and on. I tell you what's wrong with our schools. It's not the building. It's not the teachers. It's we've got homes that never have taught their children discipline. We start with the home and get that home priority, get that intact, and our whole lives are going to be better off. We'll take care of things first in our homes. After talking about children, it says fathers. Okay, there were fathers in the assembly. Paul here is zeroing in on fathers. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Fathers have a responsibility in this home. Provoke not your children to wrath. Now, how do fathers do that? I've seen them do it. I've seen fathers just pester and tease their little children till they just explode in anger. That laughs at watching them lose it. What a terrible father. I've seen other ways fathers can provoke their children to wrath. I've seen fathers look like they enjoyed punishing their children. You want to make them angry? You enjoy punishing them. What is it, some kind of pitiful power thing with some dads that now they got somebody they can control and they enjoy punishment? Fathers can provoke their children to wrath by being overbearing. They can show favoritism like Isaac and Rebecca did and provoke their children to wrath. They can be constantly critical. Never can do anything to please Dad, can you? He always finds some fault with anything you do. He'll find some reason to kind of put it down. You'll provoke that child to wrath if you do that. Fathers can embarrass their children in front of their friends, being insensitive and disrespectful of their children. It'll provoke them to wrath. And being inconsistent and hypocritical and neglect them and be unfaithful to their promises they made in marriage. But children are tough, aren't they? I've seen these tough children that withered that as children, and I've seen them as adults with tears streaming down their face. As the pain of that finally surfaces and have pent up anger. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I looked at some translations here. American Standard Version, the chastening and admonition of the Lord. English Standard Version, the discipline and instruction the Young's Literal Translation, the instruction and admonition got to the root of the Greek words through some of my study help. Here it is, training and warning. Fathers, warn those children. Let them know what life has in store. Let them know why we're doing the things we're doing. There's a right way. And teach them and instruct them. You see, children need discipline. And dads need to provide that discipline. Now, moms do too. And I know mothers do a good job at it. But dad's the sort of the doorstop here, the brake. It just doesn't, not going to get past dad. If you don't discipline your children, then whether you think you're doing this or not, I know what you're doing. You're telling them you don't love them. Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 24, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. Look in the New Testament. Go to the book of Hebrews chapter 12 and verses 8 and 9. If ye be without chastisement, whereof are all partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had our fathers in the flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Fathers, you discipline your children. Discipline is thoughtful, prayerful, loving guidance that is done for the benefit of the child. And that child needs to have the security in their years that their daddy is going to do whatever it takes to see that they walk that narrow way because they are loved. And so fathers have a big job here. The happiest children I know are disciplined children. It's a man's job, fathers. It's a man's job. We're talking about relationships in the book of Ephesians. Husbands and wives. Parents and children. Next, we'll talk about masters and slaves. Most important of all our relationships is the relationship we have with God. And all these other relationships are to be models and built upon that one there. And that one cannot be compromised. Are you in the Lord? Well, you're baptized into Christ. And then live according to His teachings.